In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Monday, December 12th, 2016 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. 160 people were killed when a church roof collapsed on Saturday onto worshippers in southern Nigeria, reports the Associated Press. Local mortuaries are overflowing, and the final death toll likely will be much higher. Congregants said the Rainers Bible Church was still under construction when it was crowded with worshippers to ordain a bishop. Metal girders crashed, and the corrugated iron roof caved in. The World View spoke with William Stark, director of International Christian Concern in the Middle East, about whether or not the Iraqi Christians who were displaced from Mosul by ISIS have plans to repopulate the city.
Christians who were displaced from Mosul, when I've asked them, okay, are you going to go back to Mosul if it's retaken, they will tell you, absolutely not. We will not go back there. We don't trust the Muslims who have stayed there with ISIS. We feel like somehow the ideology of ISIS has been kind of imparted to these folks, so we don't feel like we can ever trust them again.
Stark explained the status of Karakash, Iraq.
In Karakash, which was taken, I think, in October, what was retaken by coalition forces, all the churches have been, you know, ransacked and burned. I think 60% of the Christian houses have been burned to a point that, you know, they're not really livable. They don't feel like they can depend upon the Iraqi government to provide them funds to rebuild or to help them, you know, rebuild their lives. And they don't trust necessarily the Kurds either to do this. So they really do feel a little bit left on their own, which is why they've been reaching out to international states, asking for their support to create basically a separate state or a special zone where Assyrian Christians in the Nineveh Plain can have their own place and kind of have their own self-autonomy.
Stark suggested to the World View how Western Christians can help.
The first thing I would encourage everyone to do would be to pray for these folks. They're really facing a very uncertain future, and it's very unclear where they're going to go, what they're going to do. But also I'd encourage folks to get involved with a ministry of some sort that is providing the actual physical aid to these folks. I mean, the last 2.5 years, ICC has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in the relief effort just providing, you know, homes, food, anything, you know, medicines. The fate of the church in the Middle East, I believe, is one of the most important questions facing the global church today. And how we take care of these very vulnerable folks is going to be reflected upon our generation.
Matthew 5:10 says, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." India is cracking down on foreign non-governmental organizations based on fears that the groups are using humanitarian work to mask evangelization efforts, reports World News Service. This could affect organizations like Compassion International that provide poverty relief to children. Within the next 3 weeks, 80% of the 145,000 children supported by Compassion sponsors in India could lose that financial relief. An unnamed 44-year-old male pro-life teacher was fired at a Vancouver, Canada high school after telling his 12th grade law class, quote, "I find abortion to be wrong," unquote, reports the National Post. On December 8th, the United States House of Representatives unanimously approved a bipartisan bill to help counter the African terrorist group called Boko Haram, known for their brutal attacks in northeast Nigeria, reports the World News Service. The bill directs the Departments of Defense and State to develop a 5-year strategy to address this scourge that has resulted in tens of thousands of deaths and more than 2 million exiles in Nigeria and neighboring countries. Rudy Giuliani is out. Mitt Romney is out. Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, appears to be the first choice for Trump's Secretary of State, according to several news sources. The 64-year-old veteran oil executive has no government or diplomatic experience, although he does have ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin. The Wall Street Journal reported that Tillerson backed Jeb Bush during the GOP presidential primary and did not donate to Trump's campaign. In a bizarre attempt to shame his pro-life views, 72,000 abortion activists have donated to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name, according to CBC News. While Trump is a recent convert to the pro-life cause, Vice President-elect Pence has been a longtime champion for the rights of unborn babies. In addition to voting to defund the abortion chain Planned Parenthood when he was a U.S. congressman, Indiana Governor Pence signed into law a bill to ban abortions based solely on an unborn baby's disability, sex, or race. Macy's department store is no longer giving funds to Planned Parenthood, according to a watchdog group, SecondVote.com. Other companies which recently decided to no longer financially support Planned Parenthood include AT&T, Coca-Cola, Ford, and Xerox. Romans 12:21 says, "Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." President-elect Donald Trump is asking evangelical Christian leaders for appointment recommendations at a higher level than previous presidents, says Dr. Richard Land, president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. In fact, the Christian Post reports that Trump will be keeping his evangelical advisory board into his presidency, which includes Dr. James Dobson, as well as Liberty University's Jerry Falwell Jr. And that's The World View on this Monday, December 12th, in the year of our Lord, 2016. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. As you consider which groups or causes that you'll support with your dollars this season, as we celebrate the birth of Christ, remember The World View in 5 minutes. You can give online at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
And welcome to Generations Radio. It's different music, so that means you've got Steve Vaughn and
Phil Jack.
All right, it's Christmas season.
It is.
Yeah. So let's get some jazzy Christmas music in here. Oh, yeah.
You got style, my friend. You got style.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but what kind of style?
I didn't make a comment on that. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here.
Yeah. We may be able to talk.
Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll share about 50% now of the airtime since we got Kevin out on a cruise, I guess, with his wife Brenda.
We didn't have to duct tape him to a chair. We just sent him on a cruise.
That's right.
It was a good time to go because it is bitter cold here in Colorado.
It is beginning to look and feel a lot like Christmas.
So it's great to be here, and we're back with Generations Radio. I've been interested in what's happening politically, as most people have. It's been a shocker for most people. But it really was a great teaching moment for the students that I deal with down at Worldview at the Abbey.
Yeah.
Worldview at the Abbey is a bridge year program for students who are just getting out of high school and they want to get grounded in their faith before they hit their career or their college path. So they take a year, it's two semesters, and they immerse themselves in a biblical worldview. And one of the classes that they take is a political science class. They can get up to 30 hours of fully transferable credit. So it's basically their freshman year.
Yeah.
But I teach the political science class.
Yeah.
I don't like the term political science.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind it so much because, see, every science that's a true science is divine. So biology, chemistry, and politics.
Well, see, that's the problem that I have with it, and that is, you're right, biology, chemistry, physics, those are true sciences. But political science is this imposed idea, this worldview, if you will, that people are nothing more than digits, cogs in the machine, that they're nothing more than the sum of their environment.
Yeah.
And so political science is reductionistic. it tries to reduce people down to a formula. If this, then this. And it takes away the human factor. So I prefer to call the class civics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a civics class because that means that these students are engaged in the political process and the governmental process, and they need to understand their responsibilities and their liberties when it comes to government.
Is it civil?
I yell at them.
Well, would civilly. It be more of uncivics? Uncivil civics?
But the neat thing was that students in the political science class at the Abbey just had finished reading The Prince by Machiavelli.
So not the artist formerly known as The Prince?
No. No, did he write anything?
He wrote Purple Rain.
There you go.
Something about 1999.
Yeah.
So Machiavellianism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which really is, you know, the textbook for a lot of bad leaders.
Yeah, I could think of more.
Yeah, I mean, Hitler had it on his bedside.
Oh yeah,
Stalin had it on his bedstand next to his
Nietzsche and
yes, yeah. So they just finished reading the Prince by Machiavelli, and it's pragmatism in politics is basically what it is, and so maintaining power at any cost and by any means is the highest good for a ruler, according to Machiavelli.
Right.
And so the students have seen that play out before their eyes during this political cycle.
During the last several, I would
yes,
say.
Yes. So it's just been great to have them observe candidates, policies, campaigns, and then analyze it in light of here's what a biblical worldview is versus here's what Machiavelli says.
Yes.
But I've come to the conclusion that there are basically four threats to the future of our nation, and they're not of a political nature. They have nothing to do with politics. These threats, they walk arm in arm, and they're pushing us. They're not leading us. They're pushing us towards the precipice. And I really do think that these threats are have always been around, but they are... they're magnified in today's culture. They're merely reflected in the election cycle. So what
are these threats? There's four threats.
Yes, there are four threats.
Are you going to list those?
Yes, I think I will. I think I shall.
All righty.
The first one, I think, is moral bankruptcy. And that our nation is spending a moral capital of the previous generation.
Yeah, and we don't have much left.
No, and it's without regard to replenishing the necessary deposits in the next generation.
Yeah.
So my father's generation, the great generation.
Yes.
Yeah, they had a moral compass. Now, it doesn't mean that they were all Christians, but they had a moral compass that they followed. It was more or less a biblical worldview.
Yes.
And that... then the children of the 60s, my generation, kind of threw that out the window, and it affected even those that didn't follow that idea.
Yeah.
Okay, of the 60s. So I think that we're now at a point where we are spending the moral capital of the previous generation. The church generally has ignored the moral issues of the day and has not addressed the culture with the truth claims of the Bible. I mean, when was the last time you heard a sermon on the topic of abortion or homosexuality or politics or pornography? We don't touch those hot issues in church anymore. We just don't do it.
Well, we gotta be seeker sensitive and, you know, draw people in so we can pay for our buildings.
Yeah. And this was brought home to me when every other week we take our students from the Abbey down to the local high school, and right across the street from the high school is a park, and it's an open campus. So during lunch, students flow off campus, and the druggies and the smokers hang out in the park, or they flow on past that two blocks down to Sonic and Dairy Queen for their fast food fix.
Yeah.
And so our students engage them in conversation. And it's really a great opportunity. And we're there every 2 weeks, so these students begin to recognize who we are. I've been asked at least half a dozen times while I'm sitting in the park with our students, watching them engage in conversation. I have had high school students come over to me and say, "Are you an undercover cop?"
Well, I kind of look like one.
I just have to laugh out loud when they do that. I said, "Yeah, I'm an undercover cop. I'm doing a great job of being, you know, just blending in, right?"
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. But there are police officers who monitor, you know, traffic and that kind of thing and activity. And so I went over and introduced myself to one of the officers one time and told him what we were doing, because, I mean, here's an old guy in the park with a bunch of high school students. He's got to be wondering what I'm doing,
yeah,
right? And he looked at me after I told him what we were doing, sharing our faith with these students. He said, "These students need this." He went on then to say that he had approached the pastors in town, the Ministerial Alliance, and said, "We need help out in the park." Okay. Wow. And so I asked him, I said, "Did you have any Christians from any of the churches show up after that?" What do you think?
I'm thinking probably no.
Probably no. And so that's the sad part of the, that's the moral bankruptcy. We're confining ourselves to the church. We're creating our own ghettos.
Yeah.
And so that's threat number one. It's, see, even our students who come out of Worldview Academy, for example, have experienced the moral bankruptcy of the culture and the insolvency of the church in its attempt to invest in it. It's resulted in problem number two, threat number two, and I think that is confusion.
So confusion, moral bankruptcy, and number two, confusion.
Yes. For example, I had a discussion at one of our Worldview Academy camps with a homeschool girl. She'd been homeschooled. She's conservative family. And that's what we get at camp mainly.
Right.
Okay. But even in that arena, there has been this moral bankruptcy and confusion. Here's the confusion. She sat down with me and she said, "What do you think of Caitlyn Jenner?"
I'm glad you asked.
And I said, "You mean Bruce?"
Yeah.
She said, "Well, she wants to be called Caitlyn." And then I pulled the Abraham Lincoln. If, you know, he asked a group of people, "If you call a sheep's tail a leg, how many legs does a sheep have?"
Four.
Four. Doesn't matter what you call the leg.
That's right.
I mean, the tail, right? If you call a sheep's tail a leg. So I said, the answer is four. It doesn't matter what you call the tail. It's still a tail. And as far as Bruce Jenner goes, check his DNA.
Right.
And then she said to me, "Well, he claims to be a Christian." And I said, "He very well may be. But here's the problem. He's shaking his fist in the face of God, saying, 'You don't define me. I define me.' That's the problem." So this confusion is evident in this conversation because it reflects the confusion even among Christians as to what language we are to use to describe obvious perversion.
Yes.
And those are the first two threats, and they get worse. But
they get worse.
Yeah. I think the threats get worse. So we'll see when we come back from break what the other two might be, if people are still going to hang around with us.
Did you know that almost 90% of the words in the King James Version of the New Testament come from William Tyndale's translation of the Bible? Tyndale's work not only shook Europe during his lifetime, but it continues to bear fruit in the lives of millions of people hundreds of years later. That is a testimony to the impact that one man can have on the world through the power of Christ. So one of our goals at Generations is to encourage and inspire young adults and children to live their small lives in a big way for the kingdom of God. Visit our resource store at generations.org/young-adults to find biographies, historical fiction, audio dramas, and other practical resources that will equip your young adults and children for an impactful life. Enjoy discounts of up to 25% through December 31st at generations.org/young-adults. And here's a PS from a young adult perspective. Your kids are going to love these books and audios. So go to generations.org/young-adults to find a special gift for your kids today.
I bet you just love seeing me dance again.
I'm reminded of why I haven't been over here in a long time.
Oh, wow. You ready for Christmas?
You know, I really love Thanksgiving because it's real laid back.
Yeah.
And I love Christmas for the message, but Christmas kind of sneaks up on me.
Yes, it does.
It sneaks up on me.
Yeah, I smoked a couple of turkeys for Christmas.
Yeah?
Not for Thanksgiving. So,
yeah?
Oh, yeah, I got me a new smoker.
Oh
man. And, yeah, a couple of smoked, 12-pound smoked turkeys, and had some left over for a while. And
do you know what one druggie said to the other, right?
What one druggie said to another?
Yeah.
What?
Smoke them. How do you roll them?
So yeah, I'm looking at doing a smoked prime rib.
Ooh.
Roast for Christmas.
That sounds okay. Let's close this down. Let's go.
Yeah.
So we've
looked at a couple of the problems that you have diagnosed for
America.
I
think those are the first two threats.
So moral bankruptcy.
Yes.
Is the first one, and then number two, confusion. And so we're hoping that you will extirpate obfuscation with these last two.
Well, the third one is more ominous, and that is biblical illiteracy and misapplication of Bible verses.
Oh, yeah.
Does this one just not drive you crazy? When somebody says, well, you know, where two or three are gathered together. I mean, because that verse deals with church discipline.
Yes. Yeah.
It has nothing to do with, there's only one of me, Jesus isn't here.
God's not going to hear me. So that's my next question is always, so does God not hear your prayer if you're by yourself?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he does. And why is this verse here?
So that whenever a Christian attempts to address, for example, the failure of, let's say, public schools to teach biblical values to students, or public school teachers to do that, the typical response is this. Well, you know, I'm a Christian, but Jesus said that we have to render under Caesar, and since the school is taxpayer-supported, well, I as a Christian public school teacher have to tread lightly. Now, well, okay, let's slice and dice that. I mean, Jesus did say to render to Caesar that which Caesar puts his name on.
Right.
He puts his name on the coin.
Uh-huh.
Pay your stinking taxes.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay. However, here's the question. Whose image is on every person who has ever lived? Is it the state's? Is it Caesar's?
No.
Better question. Whose image do you want stamped on the hearts and minds of those little children sitting in those school desks? Is it going to be the secular state's image, or is it going to be God's image? Let's really make it this way. Okay. In short, Christians do not know what verses mean or how to apply them to the culture.
Yeah, and there's actually some verses in there that aren't in there that they apply to the culture.
Right.
And God helps those who help themselves.
Cleanliness is next to godliness.
Godliness. Yeah.
And by the way, Steve, whenever anyone starts a conversation with me with the words, well, I am a Christian, but I have to agree that is exactly what they are. They are the tail end of Christianity.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So the misapplication of Bible verses, biblical illiteracy, because we Christians do not think well, we certainly therefore do not act accordingly.
Right.
That leads to the last one. And I think that is evident in the culture more so than ever before. That's the lack of concern for liberty.
Oh, my, yes.
Whenever Christian florists, photographers, or bakers bring their faith to bear in their business practices and refuse, for example, to participate in an event, say a same-sex wedding ceremony, that is a violation of their conscience, the state is quick to find them guilty of violating state laws against discrimination. Here's the church's response. Immediately, the church requests a Religious Freedom Restoration Act to exempt the church from having to abide by those same state statutes. Where is the demand for liberty for all? Not liberty for some. Where is the spirit of liberty? Where is 2 Corinthians 3:17?
Yeah.
Christians really have not cared about liberty for decades. I'm convinced of this. Liberty is not preached in the pulpits nor exercised by the people in the pew. How often have you heard a prayer in church that starts with, Father, thank you for allowing us to live in a country where we can gather freely to worship you. Really? Really? I mean, what about the photographer? What about the florist or the baker whose act of worship is honoring God with his or her craft? Are they free? I don't think so. Now, what's this mean? I think we need a trumpet's call. Okay? Yeah. Nehemiah, when he started rebuilding the walls, led the people from captivity back, and they started rebuilding the city walls, the enemies plotted to foil their attempts and intended to kill them. So Nehemiah found out about this, called the people together. He ordered them to carry bricks with one hand and weapons with the other hand.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I'm going to have a trumpeter with me. And any time you hear the sound of the trumpet, that's where the battle's going to take place. Rally to us there. And then he said, our God will fight for us. We've got to have that same mentality.
Right.
The trumpet has been sounded. We are spread out on the wall far from one another. We need to rally at that point. We need to build where we can, but be prepared to battle where we must. We need to carry bricks in one hand and swords in the other. And we need to heed these threats to our culture. And so I just think those are the threats, but we have hope. And that hope is being proclaimed this season.
Right, because Trump got elected, right? We have hope.
No. Wrong season.
Oh.
I said these were not political problems.
Oh, that's right. But guess what? You know, when you talked about number four, the thing that went through my mind is we're making it. The church is making this a political problem because who are they running to for their help?
Yes.
They run to the government and say, hey, free us. Government, free us.
That's what's so aggravating and concerning to me.
Yeah.
When we should just be standing up proclaiming liberty for all, not liberty for some. But that is what this season is all about. One of my old pastors used to say, I love Christmas because he said, even the pagans have to sing his praises. He said, you walk through the mall, you hear Christmas songs.
Yeah.
Even the pagans sing his praises during this season. And so that's the hope that we need to proclaim. We need to proclaim truth and grace in every aspect of culture. And hear the sound of the trumpet. The trumpet sound.
Yeah. In church, where I'm preaching, and we've been going through the book of Hebrews, and we're on chapter 11, which is a great chapter to be on.
Yeah.
It's taken us 45 weeks to get to chapter 11, so we're taking it slow. But one of the things that I'm learning more and more of is what faith is. And since we're homeschoolers and all that, we like Latin. And so we,
right.
I said, faith is three things. It's notitia, it's assensus, and fiducia. Notitia is knowledge, assensus is assent or belief, and fiducia is trust. And we need more of all of those. We need to be like the disciples. Increase our faith. We need more knowledge of who God is. We need more belief in what he does and who he is. And we need to trust him with all of our hearts and lean not on our own understanding, but acknowledge him in all our ways. He's the one who will make our paths straight.
Yeah.
And that would get us over these four things. That would take us away from the moral
bankruptcy.
Moral bankruptcy. Because if we know God and we believe God and we trust God and trust what he says, then we get out of that bankruptcy. We get out of confusion because God is not the God of confusion. He is the God of order. And then the biblical illiteracy, how do we get to know God more is by his word and opening up his word and hiding his word in our hearts. And then our freedom, we know that our rights and our freedom come from God alone, not from the government. The government has been taking away your rights. We don't run to them and say, give them back to us. We run to the foot of the cross. We run into the throne room of God and say, God, we are free in you. Give us courage. Give us strength to go out and speak your word and proclaim your freedom to all.
Yes. True faith is to trust the one who has authority in the entire universe.
Yes.
It's to trust, to understand and trusting.
Yeah. Jesus said, all authority in heaven and in parts of the earth.
Wait.
All authority in heaven and upon earth have been given to him. Therefore, go. And so we are to go because he has the authority. He is in us. We are seated with him in heavenly places, even though we exist here. We exist on two planes. It's time for us to get out and get going.
Yeah. Speaking of going, I guess this is about time for us to close the show out, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah. So
but, hey, it's been good to be here again with you.
Oh, wow.
And be able to actually put a two or three words in to,
yeah,
you know, and have a conversation.
That's the longest I think I've ever talked in a long time since you were here last. So it's great. And getting ready for the Christmas season and the Christ who is in Christmas and getting ready for him. Once again, knowing the gospel that he became man, became one of us to save us from our sins and make us truly free.
Go out and proclaim that liberty all around you.
Amen. And so join us next time. We got, what, one more time?
Yes.
And so join us again next time while we try to do as Kevin does and lay a foundation for the next generation.
Before the